Nation. We don't need no thought control.
From WHQR Public Media, this is Reeducation Nation. I'm Logan Kennedy. This program takes a deep dive into the heart of public education. We talk to the people doing the work, from teachers, superintendents, school board members, and beyond. We want to get their perspectives as we go into the first full school year under this Trump administration, which has made its aspirations of ending federal education programs and removing federal dollars abundantly clear. How do these changes affect students, teachers, faculty, and local school boards? All in all, you're just a brick in the wall. We're joined today by Dr. Tim Merrick. He is a board member with New Hanover County Schools. He's been in that position since November of 2024. He's one of seven members. New Hanover County Schools oversees 40 public schools and over 24,000 students. He has some political experience, and you are a little more outspoken than some board members, well, arguably, and you're progressive. And so we'll get into some of that, but we're mostly going to focus on you as a school board member and what you're faced with on that board. I want to start, what are the greatest challenges currently affecting New Hanover County Schools as we go into this school year?
Well, first of all, I need to say, Logan, that whatever opinions I profess, they're my own. I'm not actually speaking for the Board of Education. But I think the real difficulties that we're having are not so different than across the state and across the country. Financing. I mean, funding our schools is just an ongoing issue. It seems to be a problem year after year. Last year, we had a $13 million deficit in our budget. And this year, we have over a $5 million deficit. 83% of our budget goes to salaries. So you just can't cut that much money out of a budget without cutting staff. And unfortunately, our classrooms are already topped out in terms of size. We can't afford to give our teachers what they deserve in terms of salary. Our teachers are having to pay average over $1,000 a year for supplies for their classrooms.
Wow.
That should be coming from the school district.
Have you seen any direct from the national and the state level as far as funding cuts that are going to affect this school year?
Absolutely. In fact, we've hit the trifecta this year. We are unfortunately accustomed to being grossly underfunded by the state. And if you look at the Leandro case all the way to the state Supreme Court, where it was proven that the state legislature underfunds public schools. And so that's been an ongoing concern. We, based on the wealth of our state, we are 49th or 50th in funding for schools in the country. But this year, despite new valuation of property and showing the vast wealth of New Hanover County, our county commissioners cut our budget by about $2.7 million.
Mm.
And if that wasn't enough, reeling from that and trying to figure out what to do, the federal government said, oh, yeah, and we're going to take another $1.6 million out of the budgets. So, any one of those, we probably could have done some wrangling and, pushed things from one account to the other and made something work. But it's pretty tough to come back when you're getting hit from all our funding sources, federal, state, and county have all hit us.
Is the school board sharing the same view or mission on this as that funding's been taken out, or is not everybody on the same page?
I think if you get us in the room, all of us care about public education. We all care that the students are getting an education, but unfortunately, politics has a way of seeping in to the school board and has for years. Last year when I ran, the number one thing people told me, I knocked on over 5,000 doors in the county last year, and what I heard again and again was, get the politics out of our schools. So even while we say we want to give a good education to our students, we have some of our board members who applauded the county for cutting back our budget. And I just don't understand how how you can have both. We want to educate our kids, and yay, county, take away more money from us. Doesn't follow.
Well, I talked to a school board member who did win her election in Columbus County. Her name's Emily Parks Grice. She was endorsed by Michelle Miro, and she gave her endorsement back to her. I interviewed her last year on some of the very divisive things that Michelle Miro had said, whether online or in person, and also her advocacy for eliminating the position she was running for. However, Grice did say that she vehemently opposes private school vouchers. Mm. And so do you think that there are times, and I know we see this pretty unarguably in politics, but at the school board level, where school board members have held back because of that R or that D next to their name on either side, they've held back because of the affiliation and definitely concerns about their upcoming elections?
So when it comes to the vouchers specifically that you're talking about, I think it's two different issues. The state is not giving us the money we need for our schools, and the state is giving money to private schools. And I think they're two different things and should be argued separately. We need enough money. If we were given enough money, there'd be less concern about the money they're giving to private schools. However, I do also have concerns about the money given to private schools, as those schools do not have the same requirements for teaching a specific curriculum. They don't have the same testing requirements. It's hard for the public to know, hey, I want to send my child to this private school. How do they rate? Well, you don't know, do you? Because it's either different testing metrics or no testing metrics. There are certain testing metrics that they do need to perform. And when we look at New Hanover County, our public schools are doing better than the majority of private schools. I'm very proud of that.
So when a parent comes to you and says, I'm about to put my child into, you know, kindergarten or first grade, and, you know, Snipes Academy is a school near us, but I'm looking at Roger Bacon, what do you tell that parent?
I think it really depends on what you want your child to learn beyond reading, writing, and arithmetic. I have Freeman is a school that is 99% free and reduced lunch children. In other words, there's poverty involved in that school district. And I know several parents who do not fit that profile who say, but I send my child there because I want them to learn about the world. I want them to learn about how other people live. I want them to understand the people in our neighborhood and not be isolated. And I think that's something we have to look at in education is, are we there simply to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic, or are we there to help our students be prepared to succeed in the world, which will require an understanding of the socioeconomic politics of today?
Moving on from that, but we'll touch on that later in the interview. In April, the New Hanover County School Board voted 5-2 along party lines to censure you. WHQR reported at that time, Republican board members saw censure as an appropriate response to you not following proper protocols and conversations with an educator, and not following directives from the chair after you lost committee assignments for 2 months because of the interaction. You said that you saw this as just supporting an educator who wanted to quit over their treatment of having a pride flag in their classroom, which the board said goes against the current policy. In the wake of that censure, like you talk with parents, has that affected how you talk with educators and people in the school system? And if so, how?
I told the superintendent when he was understanding of some of the choices I made, but still, you know, was concerned about perhaps the implications. And I had to say, Doc, if this happens again, my response will be the same. I will support an educator every day of the week. Now, what you need to know about that is that I did not tell that teacher to break policy. In fact, the irony of it is that I hoped that the teacher would follow policy, stay as an employee. We needed that employee. I think really what irritated the more conservative members of the school board was that I understood the need for a teacher to express themselves in a way that helped students to feel safe. First of all, you need to know, in case those listening do not have the history, that pride flag was 2 inches by 3 inches, and it was up on a bookshelf. Now, I believe that safe space is essential for education. I come from a background of neuroscience, and if you understand that when we feel threatened, the connections to our frontal cortex, which is where we create reasoning, become diluted, that we reduce a lot of the connections that allow us to think critically when we feel threatened. So the most important thing we can do as educators is help our students feel safe. And that was exactly what this educator was doing, was providing safe space for those people who, those students who were LGBTQ, which is estimated to be about 10% of our school population. And beyond that, I think it's really important, as we talked about a moment ago, about helping children be ready for the world they're going to live in, I think it's really important for straight kids to understand that there are others that are not straight, and they're just like you and me. We all are humans. We all have the same, you know, needs and desires. It's just about who we love. And I'm so concerned about our LGBTQ kids, or our children of color, or our children who live in poverty, to be marginalized and seen as other and not feeling like they belong, because that creates the threat, that creates the shutdown of the frontal cortex, and that reduces education.
So what the public schools do that you say some of the charter schools don't, that, you know, I don't have the exact numbers, but Roger Bacon is very predominantly white, most of them middle class, upper class. So you take a child from a family like that, and you put them into schooling for 12 years around the same people. They will not have the same real-world understanding or education if that child was put into Freeman or one of the other schools or Forest Hills around other students who, you know, some of them, like, they have the free meal vouchers. They make less. They're a different race. Maybe they have two moms instead of a dad and a mother. They need that so when they go into the real world, they know what the real world is.
You said it for me. I don't have to say it. it's the lived experiences that we all share as a community. You know, you can start to see it as our community is in itself an entity. And each of us are entities within that entity. Our community is made up of all colors and shapes and sizes and flavors. And how are we going to succeed in the world if we've only experienced one of those?
In late June, the Supreme Court released its decision in Mahmoud versus Taylor. The case concerned the Montgomery County Board of Education's decision to integrate LGBTQ+ inclusive readings into its literacy curriculum to further its goal of representing diversity. At first, the district permitted parents to opt their children out. But when the policy became, as the district put, unworkable, it decided that parents would no longer be notified when the books were being used. In response, several parents sued, arguing that exposing their children to the books threatened their right to raise their children according to their faith. However, now in some states like Texas, as an example, they've pushed, in some cases successfully, put the Ten Commandments in the classrooms. I asked the same question to our other guest, Dr. Anthony Martin, who is a former assistant superintendent. But where do we draw the line in the sand when it comes to cultural or religious education and ideology?
I wish you hadn't used the word ideology. While the word has a definition, it has been weaponized. And so as soon as people hear that word, you know, they go somewhere else. You know, there's several decades ago, a big push was on how old is the universe, right? There's even a museum, I can't remember if it's in Kentucky or Ohio, that's a museum, and I'm going to use air quotes, you can't see me because it's this radio, that it was a history of the universe all the way back to the 6,000 years ago when the universe began. Now, that flies in the face of science, right? Everything we know about it, no, the universe did not start 6,000 years ago. But here's a museum dedicated to teaching the population about the history of the universe. where do we draw the line? If a school is teaching something like that, do we say, well, they have the right to teach history the way they want? If a school says, you know, white children are smarter than black children, and that was happening up until Brown v. Board of Education and even many decades beyond that by the time it finally seeped in. At what point do we say we have a responsibility to teach what we know to be real? Now, fake news suggests that what is real is everybody's choice. Science says that we have more than two genders. I mean, intersex is the most commonly scientifically known different gender. But all the social sciences suggest that someone who is gay or even transgender is a variation on a theme here. And when we say we're not even going to talk about it, we're not even going to say, hey, this is a question. How are we preventing our children from critical thinking? Why don't we talk about it and say, hey, this hasn't exactly been proven yet, but here's a way some scientists feel this way, some scientists feel this way, some religious leaders feel this way, and some that way.
We shouldn't be afraid to have those questions in their head.
This is what the world is dealing with. And so do we choose? Well, let me ask this question. How are we serving children by protecting them from what's happening in the world?
On that note, I want to get your take on the epidemic of book banning. When asked if you supported book banning by WHQR before the election, you said, quote, "I do not believe in banning books, neither do I believe that every book or magazine is appropriate for schools or every age gap of students, every age group of students. I believe the concerns of parents have been manipulated by the Moms for Liberty and other groups." You also added that District Attorney Ben David oversaw the review of all books in school libraries and found more that had material harmful to, and found none that had material harmful to minors. Is this still your view now you've been on the board?
Yep. Sorry for a flippant answer. I've been told again and again by people, they say, I can't believe you ran for office on one platform and you're still saying the same thing. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course. And they say, well, a lot of them don't. And I'm sad to hear that. I don't believe the book banning for the very same reason of what we've been talking about, critical thinking. It seems ironic that some of my more conservative colleagues say, we want to teach critical thinking and we want to ban books. To me, those two things just do not go together.
Right.
However, a fun story, funny story from my childhood. I went to an alternative school when I was in fourth and fifth grade, and our art teacher would read to us, fourth grade, mind you, was reading to us out of Playboy magazine. Now, if you ask me today, do I think that was appropriate? I'd say no. Okay? So not every publication belongs in a school. Right? There is something that I consider, and it's very poorly defined, but what is age appropriate? You know, we have rules around what movies minors can see, right? What can they see on film that we believe is appropriate? Now, while I think that some of those rules could be adjusted, we let them see all kinds of violence and killing, but we don't allow them to see sexuality. And we could talk about that. But there's the concept that there is an age-appropriate cutoff.
What about when those books become curriculum? Like the case of this LGBTQ-inclusive book that was being used in that case. Because could it be argued, because these parents feel that it went against, whether it's their religious views or views on the world, they didn't want their child exposed to that. What about Jack and Jill? To a child that has gay parents.
Mm-hmm.
Does that not go against what their family is? Maybe not what they believe, but they have two parents of the same gender. What about a case like that? Flip it around.
Well, I see where you're going with it, and I completely agree. There is a blind spot, I believe, in a lot of conservative thinking that says, well, this is what's normal. And, you know, the question has to be asked, says who, right? For a child growing up with two mothers, that's completely normal. And then they go to school and none of the kids are talking about their two mothers. And then they start to think, well, I don't know. Am I weird? Am I different? Are my parents weird? Are they different? So it's a way of, in essence, almost shaming, othering certain demographics based on a false concept of what is normal. I'm going to keep coming back to the standard, which is the world we live in today. And the world we live in today has people of all stripes and all colors, of all different sexual orientation and who they choose as their partners and who they choose to love. And I just don't understand how we can help our children by preventing them from being exposed to this. Now, when some parent says, yeah, but that's against my religion, what if they said, well, I don't believe in George Washington. That's against my religion. What if they say that mathematics, nope, that's fake. I don't want my children learning that. I think at some point we have to say if you don't follow and don't want to work with the curriculum in our schools that we have chosen based on what scientists and educators, trained professionals, have believed to be the most worthy preparation for your child to succeed in this world, you should take your children out of school. You should, if it's your religion, then go find a religious school that suits your needs. I still have some concerns about that, but it is a parent's prerogative. And I'm not going to try to get in the way of the parent's prerogative to have the child learn the things that they want them to learn. But I do not believe this whole concept of parents' rights that says we are going to decide what should be taught in school. Our parents, God bless them, are not trained educators. And what the parents' choice is really code for is some parents get to choose what other parents get to have. So when you say, I don't want my child to read that book, okay, we have policies around that. We have procedures so that that child does not have to read that book. But when a board member says, I don't want my child to read that book, okay, here's another book. But when that board member says, no, I don't want any child to read that book, and then they want their advocacy to stay private, this is all history here, you probably know this, that's inappropriate on many levels. It's inappropriate to decide what other parents should be able to have their children read. It's inappropriate that they should think that their advocacy would stay quiet.
Lastly, when it comes to the public education system, if you were face to face with a lot of folks, federal government, the president, they want the Federal Department of Education gone. They want education in a lot of cases basically just completely redone. Now, that definition of what that will be is not clear. So with the current public education system that we have, that has its flaws. Anyone will tell you it has its flaws, but it's what we have. When it comes to that, if you're face to face with whether it's the president or a senator or a parent, as a board member, as someone who advocates for public education, what do you say is why we need public education and why children should be brought up in the public education system?
Let's look at this historically, shall we? When we talk about taking away federal Department of Education, what we're really talking about is states' rights. And let's look at the history of states' rights. Let's look at the bump that that concept has after Brown v. Board of Education. When our states, and it's all of our states, it's not just the southern states, although the southern states certainly get a lot more heat for it. You know, the era of Jim Crow coming out of, you know, after Reconstruction and slavery, states' rights was a way of maintaining the status quo without having to give way to civil rights. And so I firmly believe that the states' rights and even the parents' rights bill that we have here is really about protecting the power class, white, middle class, upper class, ability to control what happens in our communities. I know that's going to sound a little bit harsh, but there you have it. States' rights means we get to go back to teaching what we want. We get to go back to helping the children we want. The reason the Department of Education is so darn important is not just the money, right? Because it's only, about 8% of our budget right now before we got cut. What's really most important to me is the Office of Civil Rights, that if we're going to receive money from the education, from the Department of Education, and you know what? Of course we want that money. Well, then we're going to have to follow Title I, Title II, Title III. All right, we have to ensure that we are following a set of federal guidelines to make sure that every child gets treated fairly and equitably. Honestly, that's what I'm most concerned about losing.
Dr. Tim Mayer, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Reeducation Nation with host Logan Kennedy is a production of WHQR Public Media and is recorded at WHQR Studios. This podcast series is made possible by a grant from the Fourth Estate Fund.